course, we're also following the state government in Raleigh, which has effectively wrapped up its long session, but not before making a lot of significant moves. We're joined here in the studio by State Senator Greg Meyer, who's a Democrat from Orange County, to recap the last year in the state legislature and look ahead to what may be coming down the pike in the future. Senator Meyer, thank you so much for being with us today.
Glad to be back, Aaron.
As we move into the winter and you get a little bit of a break before the short session begins, what are your reflections on the last 10 months?
So I was thinking, as you asked me to do this recap, about after the 2022 elections, how we started legislative session. We're on the very first day, Senator Phil Berger, when he got reelected to be president pro tem of the Senate, gave a speech on the floor about what the Republican agenda was going to be, and it was quite obvious that after Republicans had a very strong showing in the 2022 elections, when Democrats had a pretty good year around the country, but not here, that Senator Berger believed that they could be quite brazen with their power. And over the course of the year, they delivered on everything that he promised on that first day. They restricted abortion. They expanded access to guns. They've nearly eliminated income tax in North Carolina. Pursued greater legislative control over the other branches of government. They redistricted. It has been amazing to me as they've done each one of those with their chest puffed out, how they've been so clear and so confident that they're going to be able to get away with them, both at the ballot box and in the courts. And, you know, one of the things that ended this session was that they reinforced their ability to do all these things by taking greater legislative control over the courts. And so what we end up with is we live in a state where already the legislature was the strongest branch of government, and now we have a situation where they've even concentrated more power in their own hands.
Is this precedented in North Carolina?
In some ways, it's going back in time, because there were decades, maybe even centuries, where the legislature had this much power in North Carolina. But basically, since the governor has been given the veto power, this is an unprecedented concentration of power. And I think the other thing that's unprecedented is the way that this Republican legislative majority has intruded into the courts and expanded their power in a way that is, to most people, really honestly feels undemocratic on certain things. They've eliminated the legislative branch from the Public Records Act, putting our work into secrecy, and even giving us legal, like putting in law the ability that we can sell our own records, which is just astounding to me, because if you can sell your own legislative records, you can sell them to people who have a financial incentive in keeping them secret. And people, when I tell people the things that have happened this year, and they say, well, surely the courts won't let that stand, but there's now a Republican majority on the state Supreme Court as well as the U.S. Supreme Court, and the legislature put 10 of its own appointed judges onto the Superior Court that hears the constitutional challenges to the legislature. And so they're exerting their power and locking in their power everywhere, closing out this year with a round of redistricting that is going to make it pretty darn hard for Democrats to get a majority anytime in the next 10 years.
And the line about redistricting that really speaks to me is people should choose their legislators and not the other way around. And what you have with gerrymandered district lines, which this is precedented, like this goes back, unfortunately, for centuries in North Carolina, right, and U.S. government. But to the extent that you have that, you don't really have democracy. You don't really have Republican government. And that part is enshrined in the U.S. and the state constitution. And it's never really been realized.
And especially when the legislative branch has as much power as it does, and the legislative branch itself is controlled so much by two people, the president pro tem of the Senate and the speaker of the House. The way that legislative politics works, especially with the accrued power that those two folks have in North Carolina, they control everything. And they're not elected statewide. They're elected by the current ones are elected by in two of the most heavily gerrymandered districts. I mean, they're gerrymandered in this case because they're incredibly safe Republicans. So, you know, an elected governor, whether they're Democrat or Republican, has to think about the statewide implications of any actions they take. If you are in that much of a protected seat as a legislative leader, You don't have the same perspective as somebody who's elected statewide.
Speaking with State Senator Greg Meyer, and it mentioned Republicans kind of trying to move into increasing their power over the judicial branch, and it struck me as very notable yesterday when a three-judge panel that was appointed by Paul Newby, who is a Republican, majority Republicans on the three-judge panel, sided with Governor Cooper in a legal fight over appointment power. So, like, even to that degree where you've got Republican control of the courts in that panel and in who gets appointed to that panel, you still have the courts saying to Republican lawmakers, you're going too far.
So
on that one issue.
Well, they did on 50% of that issue. They granted the preliminary injunction on three matters, but not the other three. Mm. And the three that they granted it on were the ones that had pretty much the exact same thing, had been litigated before in McCrory versus Berger and Cooper versus Berger 1 and 2. Mm. So it wasn't really surprising that a Republican-appointed bench would grant those preliminary injunctions because, like, that's a matter of established Supreme Court decision on three different decisions. So let's see what happens now when it gets appealed and it goes to the current Supreme Court, because the current Supreme Court has shown that they're willing to undo previous decisions that they disagree with, as they did with gerrymandering. And the way that the law is written now, the one that was heard yesterday, it comports almost perfectly with the dissent that Chief Justice Newby wrote in the Cooper versus Berger 1 case, and so they're clearly trying to write for the new court majority. Mm. So yeah, yesterday was a 50% victory. How long will it last? We don't know. And I think the Democrats have been slow to recognize that Republicans don't view the courts as a place to have fair and neutral arbitration. They view the courts as a place to win. Mm. And you've seen that now at the U.S. Supreme Court. But now you're going to see it increasingly in the North Carolina courts as well.
It's also noteworthy that this case that got decided yesterday, as you mentioned, like, there's a precedent in McCrory versus Berger, Cooper versus Berger 1, Cooper versus Berger 2. So you get an unfavorable ruling from the courts, you go back and do the same thing over again and over again and over again. Leandro, same thing.
Exactly.
Like, that's been going on for 25 years.
And the state Supreme Court just agreed to rehear the Leandro case, which should be in a matter of established precedent, but nope, they're going to open the doors on it again.
So what happens next? Or what should happen next? What can people do next?
I mean, we're in a difficult spot in North Carolina because elections are ultimately the accountability that you have for any elected official, including most judges, but not all judges in mm-hmm. North Carolina. And I think people need to pay as much attention to our judicial elections as they do to other elections. I said this to a group of Democrats that Governor Cooper convened last weekend, and it was mostly big donors, and I told them, you need to donate as much to judicial candidates as you do to a gubernatorial candidate. You can't differentiate the importance of these things anymore. Obviously, in 2024, we're going to elect all of the statewide seats on the Council of State, but there's also a Supreme Court seat that's going to be on. And then there's the legislature. And yes, we have gerrymandered districts, and all of us are up for election every 2 years, every single one of us, Senate and House, 170 members. And so our job as Democrats is to persuade people in districts where we have a significant uphill climb because the maps have been drawn against us, but to persuade people that they're not being served well by the current legislative majority and that they should vote for a Democrat who will serve them better. Some of that is a fairness argument about they're rigging the system, et cetera. But I think that what's also become clear this year, and you know, I kind of said the above the line things, but the below the line things has been this kind of seeping recognition that much of what the Republicans have done with their power is personal enrichment and government corruption. And as that story starts to unfold more, and if we can drive that narrative, then I think we have a chance to kind of shake people's confidence in the Republican leadership. But what went down this year with casinos, what we've seen with Tim Moore, both in his personal and professional life, and the way that he's mixed up his leadership as speaker with his business affairs and his ability to enrich himself, like, that kind of corruption really actually can change people's minds.
Speaking with State Senator Greg Myers, we start to wrap up this conversation. First of all, looking ahead to next year, can we get a sense already of what is likely to come down in the next 12 months?
Well, I don't know that we'll do a lot of legislative business. I'm not even sure we'll update the budget after this year's protracted budget negotiations. There have been some news stories about, oh, what's left on the table for next year?
Right.
Will casinos, marijuana, alcohol expansion? Yep, maybe we might do those things, but those things are really controversial. And I can't imagine us doing all three of those in one short session. Maybe one of them gets across the finish line. So I don't think there will be a ton of legislation next year. I'm sure the Republicans will pick some social divisive issues that they'll make us take hard votes on and they'll want to run on. But I don't know what those will be.
And then last question, and I don't know, I have no idea if you're going to take this in an optimistic or a pessimistic direction, but I'll throw it out there. There has been a pretty significant issue in the last 10 years where the dial got moved without a significant shift in the makeup of the legislature, and that's on Medicaid expansion. How was that accomplished, and how can that be accomplished on other issues?
You know, there's two issues, Medicaid expansion and our commitment to reducing carbon emissions, where we've seen big, broad, bipartisan success. And the common thing between them is that people are going to make a lot of money off of both of those. Ultimately, what brought the Republicans around on those was how much money was on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And there will continue to be some legislation in healthcare and energy sector and economic development opportunities where the money incentive will be there to get everybody to sit at the table.
State Senator Greg Meyer wrapping up the legislative session for this year. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll keep checking in with you over the winter.
I'll be back.